I'm here.
Okay, we will get started. First of all, I want to welcome everyone to this month's session of morning meetings. Today, we have Roxanne Emmerich joining us. She's America's most sought-after workplace transformation expert, and her new book, Thank God It's Monday, has reached and maintained its position as number one on Amazon's business bestseller list and made the Wall Street Journal bestseller list all in the first week of its release. So congratulations on that, Roxanne.
Thank you.
I've read your book and really, really enjoyed it, and we're anxious to hear a lot about it. So could you tell the group something about your book and about yourself before we get started?
Absolutely. Well, I started out of college as a loan officer to businesses when I was 21 years old, and I was the only female working with 400-some men, and I remember going out and calling on businesses and really seeing that there was such a huge difference between those that were thriving and making a lot of money and those that weren't, and that it also had this huge correlation to the finance. And so, you know, nowadays with one out of every three payroll dollars being lost due to disengaged employees set up as a statistic by the Gallup organization, that's a huge bottom-line issue. So I wrote Thank God It's Monday to really have a couple things happen. One is to show people how to be powerful in the workplace again. The second is to I'm picking up some noise in the background. I don't know if there's a way to
yes, if anybody has not muted, please press star 6.
Okay, so one is to have that fun back in the workplace. The other is to get powerful in the workplace. And the third way is to show people how to make that dysfunctional stuff that really sucks us all dry in the workplace, how to get a hold of that so that you can enjoy going to work and enjoy the people you work with.
Thanks. So what do you mean by fun at work?
Well, you know, the research is really interesting on this. Fun is not frivolous. I mean, sure, you can be high-fiving and throwing little parties once in a while, but that's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about huge bottom-line kind of fun and the fun of winning. The research is amazing in this area because it shows that people think what's fun at work is really being masterful at what they do and getting great results. And in an economy like this, when people start saying, oh, I can't because of the economy, you know, I called all our CEOs that are on our full program half ago before the recession really started taking hold, and they said, the media is going to talk a lot about a recession over the next period of time. Make sure to tell your people you didn't sign up. And it's interesting how many CEOs have said to me afterwards, that's the best thing I've ever heard. I sent out a correspondence that said that we're having record quarters, record years, many of them in the banking industry that's just being, you know, having a bloodbath, and they're having record quarters and record years because they're not participating. They're being about customer success.
Great. So suppose a CEO said to you, I can't worry about happiness at work right now. I've got to worry about my bottom line. What would you tell them?
Well, here's what that CEO needs to hear about the bottom line. Right now, 54%, there's a DECO organization that says 54% of people say that they will be seeking a new job after the recession is over, and 71% of those between 18 to 29 years old. So that is a huge bottom line issue. In fact, what they know is that the leading predictor of future profitability and growth across all industries is the same thing. It's culture. And culture is that feel when you walk into the organization that, thank God it's Monday, these people want to be here, they want to focus in on my success as a customer, not just my satisfaction, and they're good to each other, and you can feel it when you walk in. And I'd be willing to share, if you'd like, some stories of clients we've worked with that, and I can show you that it doesn't even take months and years to get the return on investment. It happens in a day where customers start to line up and say, what just happened here? Everything's different. And as a result, the growth and the profits begin to take off within truly 24 hours of the beginning of this process.
Well, I'd love to hear some of the stories, and I'm wondering if you can incorporate what you feel are the most important components to creating a workplace that people love to be at.
Absolutely. Well, some of the steps in the Thank God It's Monday book, I talk about how to create a kick butt kickoff. It's something we've been doing for 20 years, and it came as a result of when I started working as a lender. I would see these deficits of thinking and mindsets that were happening to people, and how that created a financial impact. Because I looked at everybody's financials, and so I got to see that correlation. And so what I'm showing them how to do is, first of all, how to make a decision to be extraordinary, what extraordinary looks like, and getting everyone to agree within 4 minutes about what that is and get them excited about it, out of their mind excited. Number two, how to make agreements about how to treat their customers in a way that the customers walk away saying, wow. And quite frankly, in most organizations, people don't say wow as they walk away. And third, and most important, is how do they treat each other? Because those other two won't happen if you allow the energy vampires to suck dry the work environment. And the energy vampires are the people who are the whiners, the complainers, the excuse people, the people who just always have a negative take on the world. And they make it not fun to be there. So your question was what the people...
What do you think the most important components are in creating a workplace that people love?
Okay. Well, first thing that I recommend is that they get very, very clear about what outstanding results look like and define that in a way that's measurable. And so, in most organizations, people don't define, okay, what does success look like? So for a retailer, it may look like how many new customers come in as a result of a referral. That may be something that you want to measure. Maybe it's the number of cross-sales that retailer has. So if somebody comes in and buys a sweater, do they also buy five or six other things at the same time? Or it could be the customer satisfaction scores when people leave, and there's research done afterward. So let's say that those are the three that an organization defines as, these are the leading predictors of what's going to create future results for us. If that's the case, then all you need to do is build in measurements and celebrations, measurements and celebrations, measurements and celebrations, so everybody's brain is focused on what matters. It makes me think about years ago, I needed a convertible. Have you ever needed a convertible where just a regular car just no longer works?
Mm-hmm.
It's a stage of life thing, right? And so I went off to buy a blue Saab convertible, thinking it was a very unique car and certainly no one else had one. And on the drive home in Minneapolis, I ran into about five other blue Saab convertibles, and I thought, man, they all bought blue Saab convertibles the same day. And what really was happening is our brain focuses in on a few key things, and then everything else goes in. And so when you take a few key indicators like cross sales and whatever it would be, and you keep those in front of people and have a daily rituals of celebration about them, people start getting excited about those things and they begin to happen. And and people say it's a miracle. It's not a miracle. It's just knowing how the brain works, focusing it and celebrating.
Okay. So one of the things you said here is talk about what getting results looks like. You also mentioned earlier it was about how to treat your customers and how to treat each other. Is that something that gets discussed in the organization, or how does that come about that you decide what that looks like?
The question is wonderful about how that gets decided, because most people don't really get involved in that discussion, and yet the primary job of anybody who has a job is to wow the customer. It's to not just make that customer satisfied, but to make that customer successful, because successful companies never leave you, and they will always pay premium pricing. And so are you so intent on their success, or are you just going through the motions? And so what we find when we start working with an organization is that they're really caught up in their underwear. They're focused in on minutia, and everybody's in front of an Excel spreadsheet, and they're all looking at the screen, looking busy, creating busyness to create more busyness, and nobody's using their brain in a good way that says, what does the customer really want? How can we really give that to them in an outstanding way, in a way that our competitors can never touch us? And when you do those things, you don't need to sign up for the recession. And we have client after client after client as living proof. And there's many of the testimonials right in the book from clients that we've done this with who say, wow, if our competitors ever get a hold of this information, we're in trouble. Well, now you can buy the book and you have the information. So it's available to everybody on the Think it's Monday.com site. There's audios that show you how to do these things, but also in the book there's a great work plan that basically says do these things, it'll get you going.
Mm-hmm. You said you might have a few stories for us. Are there any stories in regards to customer success, companies who have focused on customer success?
Oh, I've got a lot of great stories on customer success. We have a little bank that we have done some work with down in Texas. And I love this story because at the time we started working with them, they were really in a struggle, and the CEO didn't really like being there, and the people didn't really like being there, and the customers didn't like them very much either. And we did the kick butt kickoff, and the next day, because it was a small town, the whole town just went crazy. Everybody was talking about what just happened at the bank, what just happened at the bank. And it was just a town of like, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 people, so it got to be a pretty big buzz. Well, what the outstanding part about this was quickly everybody from the whole town started routing through the bank, and so all of a sudden there's all this traffic and people saying, what just happened here, what just happened here? Well, my favorite part of the story is there was an employee of the bank who was sitting in the hair salon sitting next to someone else who was complaining to her stylist about the bank and saying, I don't know what just happened at that bank, but man, they're really different. I was planning on leaving, but now I'm planning on staying. So that's the start. And then what we teach people to do is listen, you've got to ask great questions of your customers to find out what they really need, not what they want, but what they really need, and then meet those needs, and they will be a path to your door. So we have clients who say that they take their average transaction and double, triple, quadruple it just by getting the people to know how to ask questions to show that they care. So our primary concept is show you care, always show you care.
I absolutely believe that, too. You mentioned you also talk about how to treat each other in the workplace. How does that impact the bottom line?
Oh, that's a huge bottom line. Isn't that what 91% of employees say that they wish that management would be more aggressive in taking care of low performers? And so your good people want to leave you because they're not happy with the fact that these other things are being allowed to happen. And so, you know, the real issue here is that we start a new job and our shoes are shined and our shirt is pressed up and we've told our mamas that we're going to be the most amazing thing that ever hit this business. And then within about 2 weeks, we discover we work with a lot of people with issues and then we that they're shooting wildly toward mediocrity, and we lower our sights. And then 20 years go by. The reason I wrote the Think Ads Money book is to get everybody at the same time back into that first day feeling on the job, that feeling of, yes, I am going to make a difference with my work. Yes, I do know how to take care of people who are getting in my way. I'm just going to show them how to be better people. But I'm not going to, because, you know, you can go to another organization, but you're going to have the same thing. It's out of the frying pan into the fire. Same people will show up there, too. And so, you know, we have to learn the skill sets of how to teach people how to treat us.
Okay. You mentioned in your book that you want all employees to be leaders in a company. But where do you draw the line between what the people want and what the boss wants?
Well, one of the things that we teach is that leadership is not a position, it's a way of being. And so what I mean by that is that everyone needs to step up to the plate. Let me give you a quick story about this. There was a gal who was a bookkeeper in a bank that wasn't doing real well, and she saw an opportunity to step up and help in a bunch of different ways. And so she got very involved when we came in to do the kick butt kickoff and said, hey, I want to be in charge of this program. Well, within the first 30 days, they had never grown more than 2% a year for 10 years in a row. Within the first 30 days, they grew 35%. Well, she kept pushing this thing along, and the, you know, profits went up 44% here and even more there, and it happened year after year. They made her the president, and then they made her the CEO. Now, this is a woman who didn't even have a four-year college degree, and she's running a $1.3 billion bank and setting the world on fire because she's become the good human that we're teaching people how to become with the Thank God's Money process and to not allow the others to get her down.
Yeah, you talk in your book about some of the obstacles that come up when you're trying to create this kind of culture and how to deal with them. One of them was energy vampires, but you mention a few other types of obstacles that come up. Can you say something about what we can do in companies where, you know, you are engaged and you are caring about the customers and each other, but you run into other people who maybe are not on that same page?
Yes, those other people. Yeah. Exactly. We've all run into them. Well, let me give you a few examples. The one that I think is the worst, the absolute worst thing that can be allowed in a workplace is when people gossip about each other. Because when you do that, you may as well bring baseball bats and beat the heck out of each other because you so hurt the people around you by doing that and by participating and by listening. Any part, any role in it whatsoever is so deflating, and it makes you feel unsafe in the workplace. And so what we show people to do is to say, okay, first of all, forgive yourself everything from the past. You didn't know, okay? So you didn't know that the only reason you gossiped is because you didn't feel good about yourself, and so you needed to put somebody else down so you might feel better, and of course it never works. But you didn't know that. But now you know that. And so now we're going to say, stop it, zero tolerance, and don't ever think about doing it again. And so from now on, if you have a conflict with somebody, go right to that person and say, hey, Lynn, when you do this, it creates this mess. My request is from now on you do this instead. Do I have your commitment? And so it's a nice, clean way. And if somebody comes to you and they're gossiping, you can say to them, sounds like you need to go talk directly with Lynn. And you immediately stop them from talking. You do not listen and say, oh, yes, oh, you poor thing, oh, that's awful, oh, can you believe that, oh, so-and-so did that to you. None of that support for the crazy-making is allowed. And so when I get groups during the kickoff to agree that that's going to be a ground rule, tears go down people's cheeks. They have been so damaged by gossip, and they're so happy. People will come up to me afterwards, and they'll say, I've hated working here for 18 years. I can't wait to go back to work tomorrow. That's exactly what we're teaching people how to do, is how to make those kind of agreements about how to kick some butt and take some names and have some fun, but really how to be good for each other.
Yeah, this kind of relates back to one of the chapters in your book about commitment, and you talk in there about having a 10 commitment to creating this kind of culture and this kind of workplace, and not to let up until you've got everybody at a 10 commitment.
Mm-hmm.
What happens? Well, I guess I'm thinking of a couple different scenarios here with that, but I often see sometimes it's the boss that is the one that doesn't have the 10 commitment. So
exactly.
What happens then? Because, you know, sometimes there can be fear about confronting the boss.
Exactly. Great question, because it's true that many bosses are the ones that actually are the problem, because they're humans too. And so, you know, what we teach people is, listen, your boss didn't give the three-step management training program. Here's your desk. Here's your phone. Good luck. I mean, most of them, that's exactly what they got. And we think that as soon as they received the title of manager, they were suddenly deemed as being enlightened. It just doesn't work that way. And so that means that we're there to teach them too. Just like our kids teach us, so do employees teach their bosses lessons. It's not like the boss is always smarter. I don't know why we think that even makes sense. And so what we teach people how to do is how to go to their boss and say, hey, boss, when you do this, it creates this mess. Can you do this instead? Great. Do I have a commitment for that? Perfect. I'll hold you to that. And, you know, the other day someone was telling me that there's a woman who was running an organization and one of her, like a billion-dollar organization, and one of her employees came up to her and they have a dress code that says that from such and such a month through whatever that you wear nylons under your shoes, otherwise you don't have to. Well, it was the time of the year where nylons were necessary and she didn't have them on. And this young woman comes up to her who is at the very bottom of the org chart and says to her, hey, I just noticed that you don't have nylons on. Now, you know, we do have a dress code about that, and I just want you to know about it. I'm calling it tight, which is one of the things we talk about in the Think Fast Money book. I'm calling it tight. And the CEO called me and said, now I know I have a healthy organization. When the person at the very bottom of the org chart comes and talks to me about not wearing nylons, this is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, from their numbers, it's working. They are setting records in growth and profitability. They forgot to participate in the recession, too.
You mentioned in your book about the hoopla team, and the thing I loved about that was because it provided consistency with this whole philosophy and keeping this whole culture going. Can you maybe tell the group what that is and maybe give some ideas of what can be done to keep, once you get the momentum going, how can it be kept?
Yes, I would love to talk about the role of the Hoopla team, about how they keep the momentum and accelerate it. People think that when a transformation happens, that it's just going to go straight up and stay there forever. Well, many of our clients go right up through the ceiling. You know, the day after we do this kick butt kickoff, the words they use to me repeatedly are, "It's a miracle." Well, it is a miracle, and it creates miraculous results immediately. However, it's like, you know, putting flowers in the garden. If you don't weed the garden, you're going to have a lot of weeds. And so the Hoopla team is there as part of the process to protect the culture and advance the culture. So we ask them to do a series of rollouts, and there's a rollout process. It's a very scientific approach, because if you follow the process, it works. If you don't follow the process, it doesn't work nearly as well. And so we ask them to follow the process to roll out this really great, about one new moment of truth or sales approach or value, you know, something every other month. And then when they roll out with fun, and then they measure and celebrate, measure and celebrate, measure and celebrate. And then they're also in charge of the quarterly celebrations. And so what they're doing is they're the glue. They're the ones that keep the culture advancing and keeping it from being destroyed whenever those nasty things come along, like somebody embezzles or, you know, all those kind of things that just kind of rip a company apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about people who are working alone, or are in, some of the people on this call maybe work in very small offices, not in real large companies? Now, some of the people on here do work in large companies, but what would you have to say to the people who are in very small offices about keeping the energy up and culture?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say to people in the small offices that it's all the same, because if you're in business at all, then you have customers and you have vendors. All of these are needing the same relationship tending that we're teaching in this process. And so, because you can't, any small business isn't really run by themselves. I mean, maybe you have a bookkeeper, maybe you have a marketing person who supports you, maybe you have, even the people at the post office, enrolling them and helping in whatever they do. We always have people on our team. And when you know how to get the people on your team zooming in the right direction, it's fun. But when their heels are locked in and they're trying to be a pain in the butt and you don't know how to break them of that, yeah, it's not fun. And, you know, and it reminds me, there's a great saying that I heard years ago called, if you can't change your people, change your people. So you do everything you can to coach them. And if that doesn't work, you have what I call in the book, the conversation, which is a very blunt way, that very loving but very clear way of having people decide which side of the fence they're on.
I love that. I think it's so important. I want to pause here and just kind of summarize what we've got so far, because I want to make sure that I and the people on this call understand what has to happen if you want to have a Thank God It's Monday culture. You mentioned the kickoff meeting, the vision, the commitment, the Hoopla team, which helps with consistency. You mentioned confronting those that are not committed. Is there kind of an order that this happens? Does there have to be a conversation before you kick this off? Where does the vision fit in as far as, do you have to know what you want before you kick this off?
Okay, great questions. What comes first? What comes second? The Kick Butt Kickoff is designed to be a one-day transformational event. We usually meet with the managers in the afternoon, and then all the employees from the board of directors down to the lowest position on the org chart, all in the same room at the same time. And that whole day we create the vision of what extraordinary looks like. We teach the managers in the afternoon session a whole different way of managing people about how to change the language in an organization, so no more excuses, no more whining, no more gossip, you know, how to clean up all that stuff so people can get their work done. And then in the evening, it's a loud, ruckus, fun, playful kind of party, but it's a down-to-business party. We do about 3 weeks worth of curriculum in about 2.5 hours. People walk out of there and they go, that's how this business works, and they're all going the same direction at the same time because they all understand the commitments of what it is that we're doing and that we're all committed, and we don't walk out till everybody's committed. the conversation happens after that. For anybody who remains, who, you know, looks like they're not really in, then you have the conversation with them, which we can go into more in depth if you'd like to. And then after the conversation, and then in addition to the conversation, then immediately the Hoopla team begins their process. So that's the step-by-step order of how that all comes together.
And how much do you feel that people's, I don't know, personal problems get in the way of this? So say you have somebody that comes in and they are committed, but they have a lot going on at home. And, mm-hmm. you know, how do you deal with that kind of thing?
Well, people do have issues at home, and people do have issues. I don't know what the most recent statistics on this are, but I remember several years back reading somewhere that 25% of the workplace is being treated every year, or of the workforce is being treated every year for mental illness or substance abuse, and that's every year. So, you know, you bring that in, and then you just add to that normal dysfunctions such as the whining, the gossip, the, you know, all that kind of crazy stuff, and it's amazing any work gets done at all. And that's why 37% of a manager's day is spent dealing with dysfunctional behavior. And so what we're doing, you know, when I finish teaching this stuff, people will line up afterwards, and they'll say things to me like, I've been going to a therapist for 20 years. I healed more by just understanding this than I ever had from anything else. That was amazing. Because nobody just tells people, you know what? You are responsible for your behaviors. Stop blaming everybody else. You are responsible for this behavior, so make better choices. And what's really powerful is when you teach a whole team together, listen, you're responsible for your teammates' choices. If they're not making good choices, call it tight and tell them what you want. Don't go complaining about them. Don't go whining to somebody else. Go right to them and ask for what you want.
And, you know, this is what's going through my mind is, what if it's that somebody maybe has an addiction or, you know, I don't know, something really violence going on at home, or, you know, do you confront people about those kind of situations too? Because, you know, I'm just wondering, it seems like it's going to be hard for somebody who's got some really heavy stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because I've got story after story about that of people who tell me, hey, I was having a struggle with depression. Hey, I was having a struggle with addiction. Hey, I was having a struggle with an abusive spouse. And this stuff worked in those cases. Now, I'm not saying it'll happen. It works every time. But I am saying that when you do teach people how to make better choices in the workplace, they can't help but take that. Here's a wonderful story. There was a young woman who came to me a few years back, and she wrote me a little letter afterward. And she said that the teacher chased her down the stairs at her school and said, what are you doing at home? Your son, you know, has always been kind of a challenge in the classroom, and he's just amazing right now. And it all just happened in, like, the last month. What is going on? And this woman said, oh, it's the things I learned at boot camp and the things I learned in the kick butt kickoff. And so she wrote me a letter afterwards saying it made such an impact not only on the workplace. Incidentally, their workplace just got listed as one of the top places to work in their state, or not one of the top, the top. And when we started working with them, she had said, so they really did turn around. But along that path, when you apply things in the workplace, you can't help but take that stuff home with you. And quite frankly, our children need us to become much more sane and much more good for them. They need us to get to go to work and then get to come home, as opposed to have to go to work and then have to come home, to really show up where we are. That's what our kids really need from us, too.
Yeah, that was one of the things I had marked off in this book to ask you about. You mentioned the author of Ask the Children, and that the question that was asked, if you were granted one wish to change the way your mother or father's work affects your life, what would that wish be? And I think they expected these children to say they want more time with their parents, but that was not the answer that they gave.
No, isn't that amazing?
I thought really amazing.
Yeah, because, you know, parents work a lot of long hours, but the kids aren't saying don't work the hours. They're saying be happy, you know, and happy is a choice, and nobody gets that. Everybody wants to blame the world for making them miserable. I was at the airport the other day in Minneapolis, and there were two security guys who were the guys who take your card and look at it, and they make the little mark on your boarding pass as you go through security. And they sat within 18 inches of each other, and one of them was just doing his job. I mean, he was clearly not very impressed by the human race. The other one was having a hoot, and he was singing between people. He was making eye contact with them and joking with them and saying, oh, you're better looking than that picture. And so having a ball, both doing the same job. The one is thinking life couldn't be much better than this. The other one is thinking life couldn't get much worse than this. And what the one didn't know is that the other made a very healthy choice. And that is, you can be as happy as you choose to be in any situation. It is a choice. Do you mind if I share a story with you about that I just received an email about that I just think shares this message so beautifully?
We would love to hear it.
I just received an email 2 weeks ago from one of my clients in Minnesota, actually. And apparently there was a woman in this organization who just wasn't coming along. And you know, she had some great skill sets, so they hung on to her. But, man, she was just kind of pulling everybody else down. And the rest of them were just zooming and taking off and just kind of doing circles around her. Well, they're reading the book together. They're taking chapter by chapter the Thank God's Monday book. And as they go through the chapters, they get together and they have a little powwow for 15 minutes once a week and talk about what they learned and how to apply it. And this one woman who had been the crab of the lifetime, where everyone just thought she is impenetrable, she is miserable about life, you know, we'll just never get through it to her. 2 weeks ago at her meeting, she said, you know, for 18 years, I have hated Sunday nights because I knew Monday was coming. And when I read the part in the book about choosing my attitude and that I can choose to have fun and you know, choose to decide to like the people I work around and even with their flaws and their, you know, all their little, you know, neurosis and whatever, I can choose to love them. I can choose to have fun. And now, she said, the last couple of Mondays, I've been having a ball. And the whole place, I guess, just cheered and went nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a beautiful story about someone who just saw the light and went, okay, I see how this works now?
I think what you said is so key, is that we can choose our attitude, regardless of what's going on around us.
Yes. You know, and that's a good reminder to all of us every day because, you know, I wrote this book, and yet there are times when I get down in a funk, and I want conscious people around me who are saying, hey, you look like you're down in the funk. Come on, choose a better attitude. Because then you can be healthy in your life. If you let people around you not push you along and not take a stand for you really having a breakthrough, then you never have the potential to be who you could be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a couple more questions. How do values play into all of this? How do a company's values?
The values are the true north. The values are what drives everything. And in fact, if you want to get better results, choose better values. And that may sound really like a funny thing to say, but the reality is, if you look at people who have amassed great wealth in their life and done it, you know, with good ethics, and they have a whole different level of values. For instance, one of the things you'll see in their values is they take a real strong stand for making a contribution with their life. Okay, so that's in their value system. They also feel that their word needs to matter. In other words, if they say they're going to do something, then by God, they're going to do it. Now, that doesn't mean they're not human. Once in a while, humans make mistakes, but even when they do, they go, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did this. I'm so sorry. Here's what I'm doing. Here's my massive corrective action plan to make sure I'm back on task. And so those kind of values, when you define those values, can really drive behaviors. And so one of the things that we encourage for our businesses is that, and any kind of organization, is that on Monday morning that they sign up on the Thank God's Monday website. And on that site, there is an audio for free every Monday that teaches a lesson, how to not give excuses, you know, what to do if somebody gives you an excuse, how to deal with passive-aggressive behavior, how to get better results quickly, how to keep your boss apprised, you know, basic stuff that nobody teaches anybody in the workplace that's so powerful in creating the results. So I'm asking people to take a stand in reading the book together, and I think that's why the book has been on the bestseller list for so long, since it came out, is that businesses are buying this in bulk. So are organizations. Schools are buying it in bulk. Libraries are buying it in bulk. You know, people want to get together as organizations and say, we want to transform the organization, and the timing is right. I just think right now, during a recession, we can't afford not to.
I agree. Now, there's people on this call from all levels within the organization. How does someone, say, who's, you know, a manager, go to, you know, the CEO of the company and say, you know, I want to change the culture of this company? How would you suggest to get this going from any level in the organization?
Great question. The way to get this going is to, regardless of your position, realize that position is a way of being. It's not a position. Leadership is a way of being. That you go to this boss and you say to them, "Hey, boss, I got an idea. I just read this book and I bought a copy for you and I'd like for us to read this together and I'd love for us to do this because I think we could have a lot more winning going on in this organization and I think winning is fun and I want to be a part of that." If the boss says something like, "Oh, you know, I got a business to run, I'm too busy," say, "Okay, thanks," and then go in the next day and say, "Hey, boss, I got this idea. I just read this book," and just do a repeat and do that every day. I learned this actually from one of my clients who did this, and then when we finally did help this organization, we helped them from like 12% organic growth up to 70% organic growth before they went public by using this process. But this gal wouldn't take no for an answer. And so when they finally had me come in, CEO did a PowerPoint and he showed people with this little picture of him sitting behind his desk with a cartoon title of above each of their faces where she was constantly coming into him and saying, "Hey, boss, I want to do this." And he kept saying, "No, no, no." And she kept coming the next day, "Hey, boss, I want to do this." So finally she said to him, "Hey, boss, I'm going to take you out to eat every Thursday for the next month." And he said, "Really? To what do I owe this honor?" She said, "I'm going to read to you." It was a different book that I had written, but, you know, it was about taking the process forward. And so she didn't take no for an answer. And, you know, let me ask you this question. Do you think she felt good about herself at the end of that? You know, I think the answer is yes, because she made a huge impact with her life.
And, you know, even as I listen to you talk, I think not just the bottom line is going to improve, but I think everyone's health is going to improve, and that alone has to improve the bottom line when you go to work and you feel happy instead of, you know, stressed and heavy.
Well, 71% of the younger people plan to look for new jobs as soon as the recession is over, and 54% of the others, and nobody's happy at work. You can't tell me that that doesn't lead to depression and disease. Mm-hmm. And so when people aren't happy at work, they're not happy at home, and they're not healthy at home. And so it absolutely has a huge correlation. And here's one of the reasons I wrote the book. I am so concerned about the number of people who are so miserable that they have to go make a living that they never get to explore. Like, I have a guy named Dale who is an executive vice president of an organization down in Louisiana area. And he said to me, we went through this process when I was 60 years old. I was counting the days until retirement. And now, if anybody would have told me that after like 40 years of doing the same thing over and over again, where we sat behind our desks and did the Excel spreadsheets, that we could be having this much fun bringing in all these new customers, having employees be so revved up, I never knew it could be this fun. I can't imagine ever retiring. That's why I wrote the book, is that's available to everyone. And I know it sounds Pollyannish as people are listening because they're going, yeah, right, you should see my organization. Trust me, I've seen it all.
You know, you talk about leadership being a state of being, and I totally, totally believe that. What state of being do you think that people have to be in? What's the main change that people have to make? I mean, I'm sitting here thinking about the piece you said about attitude is a choice. And, you know, there may be people on this call, I don't know, looking around and saying, how the heck can we possibly transform this? This is just, it just seems overwhelming.
Oh, I can understand what they're thinking. I've walked into those messes. And I've had people say, if you can do it here, you can do it anywhere. And it can be done anywhere. I really, really believe that. But here's the part about the leadership that I'm really talking about. It's about being powerful and not having any experience anymore of victimhood. I'm a real stand for people to drop the victimhood in their life because victimhood isn't very attractive on adults. Victimhood looks like, oh, gosh, those people over in bookkeeping, they never give me what I want, as opposed to calling up bookkeeping and asking for what you want. Or, oh, management would never listen to me, or I have an idea, but they would never listen. You know, at some point in life, we all just have to plain grow up. And some people do it at 20, and some people are struggling with it at 80. But good, responsible communication means being accountable for yourself. And so if you see something that needs to be changed, then use advancing language as opposed to energy suckhole language, mm-hmm. and get the solution happening. But this whole old management, never this. You know, and management takes a bad rap, I got to tell you. It's not fun, and it's not pretty being a manager, because everybody wants to pick on them because that's their way of getting back for the coaching they're getting to get moving. And so that victimhood thing, not attractive. So I really encourage people to take their power back, and they will feel so much better about who they are, and it will transfer to every area of their life.
Yeah, I think especially in relationships, like what you're talking about, you know, bookkeeping didn't do this. It's, you know, you have to look at, how am I part of this dynamic? You know, how... You know, I didn't ask, I didn't say I needed this, or, you know, how am I responsible for the situation that's occurring?
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, I see people sometimes, you know, I know women who have been divorced for a couple of decades, and they'll say things like, I've been, and they're still blaming that SOB who ruined their life, right? Okay, it's been 2 decades, and it doesn't even occur to them that SOB stopped ruining their life 20 years ago. Now they've been ruining their life. And so, you know, the key is to let go of victimhood means move on and say things like, and then that happened. So, yes, somebody will steal from you in your lifetime. Yes, somebody will hurt you. Somebody will cheat you. Somebody will abandon you. Someone will, you know, a spouse will leave you. A spouse will have an affair on you. A boss will promote somebody else when you just knew you were the right person. And then that happened. Let it go and go back and get powerful again, because you know what? This stuff happens to everybody. It's part of the human condition, but how we respond to it makes all the difference. And so if we see it as, what an opportunity, I just was looked over, and I know I'm more competent, so I'm going to go find the right thing for me. Great. Go on, sister, make it happen. You know, mm-hmm. Get your power back. Go make it happen. Or go and say, you know, clearly this person did something better than I did. What do I need to learn? Because I would like to be advanced next time, and I don't want to create a big mess over this, but I do want to learn about how I can put myself in that position. That's the language of power, and that's the language that's so missing in the workplace, where victimhood is so supported by people saying, oh, you poor thing.
Well, you use the phrase advancing language. Can you give some specific examples or maybe a skill of how people can use advancing language?
I would love to give you some examples of how to use advancing language. When I talk to our clients and I check in with them, I go through a process and I say, okay, tell me about your successes, because you should always be building on successes. And so let me know what those are so we know what to build on. And then we're going to be talking about your opportunities for breakthrough. And, you know, most people call these things problems. I do not let our clients use the word problem. The very word puts people into whining and complaining and blaming and all that dysfunctional stuff. And so it's not a problem. It is your next opportunity for breakthrough. And so we define, and I ask them, okay, let's rank these. What's the biggest opportunity for breakthrough that's going to create the biggest opportunity for you? Okay, what's number two? What's number three? Great. Now let's create some solutions for those. Okay, who's in charge? By when? If you hit these obstacles, what will you do? Got it. Go. That's advancing language. Non-advancing language is, oh, we have this problem, we always have this problem, and, you know, they're not doing anything, wah, wah, wah. And conversations, I've even had those conversations, yes. I mean, we all go there as humans, but do we stop each other when we start to go into the whining and get back about the results?
So I'm hearing you say, you know, become responsible, use advancing language. The other big thing I heard was that how important feedback to each other is, you know, to create a culture where it's really open feedback. It's welcomed. It's
required.
Yes.
Required.
Yes.
And that's the part that's the huge breakthrough part, is to not let people get away with saying things like, well, I didn't think it was my place to say something. Well, okay, so if your head is going underwater, do you think it's your responsibility to say something? Well, great, your head is going underwater, because if your teammates aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, they're going to kill your company and you're going to lose your job. That's how it is in economic times like this. And so your head is going underwater. Please scream. Mm-hmm. But do it in a nice way. Ask for what you want so you don't need to go under the water. And so, you know, just some good responsible language can make a huge difference in making this recession go away and getting fun back into the workplace.
Yes. So we're coming close to the end of this call, and I want to make sure that everyone gets, you know, the two or three core ideas that you feel are the most important things in creating a Thank God It's Monday culture. What would you
Great question.
Say they are?
Okay. The core things that they need to do to create a Thank God It's Monday culture are, first, make agreements about how you're going to be together in the workplace. Very, very, very important. Again, go to thankgoditsmonday.com. Sign up for the audios, sign up your entire work team, sign your boss up, listen together, make agreements, make that happen. And also read the book together and make those commitments. Great way to create those commitments. Number two, define what success looks like, but really define it. As I explained earlier, what is it for your organization? What are the 3 to 5 key things that if you measured and celebrated, that when those things get better, everything would be great? And number three is to understand the personal responsibility. Don't wait for somebody else to do this. I don't care if you're the receptionist. I don't care. I know a guy who was in charge of the parking lot of a financial organization in Massachusetts who drove so much business to that organization, it was unbelievable. He knew all the customers' names. He knew their kids' names. He knew what they needed. He would call ahead into the organization and say, hey, so-and-so is coming in. They're looking for such and such. I'm walking him in right now. I mean, this is a guy who took charge. And so regardless of your position, decide to be in charge.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very important. And, you know, even as I was reading your book, I was thinking, you know, it may appear that it's hard to change the culture of an organization. I'm not saying it's easy, but when I read the book, it felt so light and doable.
It is doable. And, you know, what's interesting is every time we've done a kick-butt kickoff, we have, without exception, have had a huge turnaround in the results within the organization. It's immediate. And so, when people are always saying, oh, it takes 2 years to shift the culture. It does not. It takes one day, but you have to follow the process. And the key part of the process is you have to go into the eye of the needle and really deal with these dysfunctional behaviors and really get everyone in the organization to put their hand up and say, no more of this. I'm in. But to do that, you have to create this fun and lightness. And so it is a kind of a scientific process to make happen. But, boy, does it pay the dividends behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the vision, I think the vision has to be there that, I wonder how many places have actually, I mean, I think more and more places are starting to think about, a Thank God It's Monday workplace, but, you know, how many places still have not even thought about that is even being possible when it's very possible?
You raise a great point. People don't even know what's available to them. And that's why I wrote the book, too, is because I don't think people even think it's possible. I think most people have hated their jobs since day one. I think that they've switched jobs and hated the next job and hated the next job and never understood their role in, hey, I could have been the one that turned that company around. Hey, I could have been the one that really turned that department around. And so it's really not that hard. It is a step-by-step process, and it is about being really fastidious to the process because, whether you believe in gravity or not, it does tend to have an impact on your life and always in a pretty consistent way. Same thing with these principles I teach in this book. I've spent 20 years going into companies having these kind of turnarounds. The financial but actually were the ones who begged for me to write this book because they said, can you show our clients how to do this? We wouldn't have bad loans anymore. And that's why I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do highly recommend it. And we are coming to the end of the call. So would you let everyone know where they can get the book, where they can get in touch with you, or anything else that you want to share with this group?
I would love to. They can go to thankgoditsmoney.com, and there's free gifts that they can put in their receipts for the books and receive all kinds. There's amazing, amazing gifts from many of my friends that are wonderful. And also to sign up for the audio, so that's a wonderful place. They can call my office, and my office is 800-236-5885. That's 800-236-5885. And they can... Also, the books are in all the bookstores. It's been on the bestseller list for quite a few weeks. If your bookstore doesn't have them, please ask them to get them. But my encouragement is buy one for every young person you know who's graduating from high school or college about to go get a job before they lose their passion for what can be extraordinary in the workplace. Buy one for your friend who doesn't like their job, and buy one for a couple people you work with and say, guys, let's get together, let's do this, let's make it happen.
Yeah, and I am encouraging everyone to do this because I do believe that doing this will increase the profits, the health, everything in the organization. So I do highly recommend this book, and thank you so much, Roxanne, for being on this call. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Lynn. It has been my joy to be with you, and thank you for the good work you're doing in helping people choose their attitudes and make a big difference in the world. Your work is making a profound difference, so much appreciation.
Well, thank you to you, too. Okay, everyone, well, have a great day, and I will see you next month. Thanks again, Roxanne, and
thank
have
you.
A great day, too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.